So Elon Musk has gone head to head with a BBC reporter, and it did not go as the reporter planned. We got more with that. Let's get into it. Welcome and happy Wednesday to all of you joining right now. Go ahead and give this stream a like so that more people can find our channel, and subscribe if you're not subscribed. I am always amazed by the amount of people who are watching this channel who are not subscribed to the channel. Come on, show us your love and support. We gotta keep things moving here, keep people finding this channel. I appreciate every single one of you who is watching at the moment. We're gonna get into this Elon Musk video, and we've got some other news. Daniel Radcliffe, the star Harry Potter in the Harry Potter series is now supporting trans children enough to sit down with them in a project for the Trevor Project, an organization that I loathe, sitting with them and talking about how they knew that they were trans from the ripe young age of about 6 years old. Plus, new terms, phrases, red pill based. You guys heard these words, right? They might be on an FBI watch list and might label you as an extremist if you're using them on the internet. Plus, we've got a couple things from libs of TikTok and a new video from Cardi B where she talks about the difference between rape and robbery. Robbery, she is accustomed to, as she used to drug and rob men when she was a stripper. Rape, not so much. We're going to get into that video and give you our reaction to it. Here is Elon Musk going head-to-head, or toe-to-toe, with a BBC reporter about hateful rhetoric on Twitter. You all know the billionaire bought Twitter for $44 billion and has been ushering in a new platform where it essentially is promoting free speech, allowing people to think freely and openly and espouse their opinions, and a healthy amount of fact-checking on the things that people say, even as far as President Joe Biden being fact-checked on Twitter multiple times now. But the BBC reporter took issue with Elon's taking over of Twitter, saying that it brought about more hate speech, hateful rhetoric, and that he himself was seeing more on the platform. Let's listen.
Content you don't like or hateful? What do you mean to describe a hateful thing?
Yeah, I mean, just content that will solicit a reaction, something that may include something that is slightly racist or slightly sexist, those kinds of things.
So you think if something is slightly sexist, it should be banned?
Is that
what you're saying?
I'm not saying anything.
Well, I'm just curious. I'm trying to understand what you mean by hateful content. And I'm asking for specific examples. And you just said that if something is slightly sexist, that's hateful content. Does that mean that it should be banned?
Well, you've asked me whether my feed, whether it's got less or more. I'd say it's got slightly more.
That's why I'm asking for examples. Can you name one example?
I honestly don't.
He's quaking in his boots. He's quaking in his boots, brothers. You can tell in the energy here that this man fully expected to just come at Elon Musk, make all of these accusations and claims, and then just not have to back them up, and that he was going to run Elon Musk into a corner. That's what he thought was going to happen here. And it did not go as planned whatsoever, because Elon had clarifying questions and he couldn't answer the clarifying questions. Imagine having the audacity, the gall, to go into an interview with a man like Elon Musk, regardless of who you are, and not be prepared to substantiate the questions that you have for him. Just wild. The audacity is incredible. It's the confidence for me.
Name a single example.
I'll tell you why, because I don't actually use that for you feed anymore, because I just don't particularly like it.
But
a lot of people are quite similar. I only look at my second.
You said you've seen more hateful content, but you can't name a single example. Not even one.
I'm not sure I've used that feed for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
How did you see the hateful content?
Because I've been using Twitter since you've taken it.
He even said specifically in my feed I am seeing more hateful content, and then when pressed just a little bit, just a tap, he could not substantiate it. Oh man, this is amazing.
For the last 6 months.
Okay, so then you must have at some point seen that you for you hateful content. I'm asking for one example.
Right.
I say that you don't know what you're talking about.
Really?
Yes, because you can't give me a single example of hateful content, not even one tweet, and yet you claimed that the hateful content was high.
Well,
that's a false.
No, what I claimed.
You just lied.
What? No, what I claimed.
Elon, you just lied. And you can see there's like sort of an exuberance behind telling him he just lied, because this is all on video for everybody to see. This is just astounding. And think about the claim there. I was seeing so much hateful content that, you know, he said, I don't even go on my feed anymore. Maybe I'll just look at the people that I follow. I won't even resort to going to my personal feed anymore because of how much hateful content I'm seeing. And think about those strong words, hateful content. If you saw something that was purely hateful, filled with vitriol, don't you think you would remember what you saw? If it was enough to have you stop using the platform, or at least have you use it in a different way to avoid the things that you were seeing, to avoid these hateful messages that, you know, awful, I'm assuming, right-wingers are putting out for you to see, don't you think you'd remember what you saw? Just at least one example. And, you know, he came into this interview ready to lie. How is he incapable of coming up with a lie? He could have just lied and made up a hateful statement that he's seen. You could have said anything. There's a bunch of anons on Twitter all the time. You could have just made up a statement, but he wasn't even strong enough to do that.
You know what this reminds me of, which, hi, by the way, but whenever your viral video went out, when you confronted the protesters at Winona State and they were like, you know, picketing you and saying that PragerU has said all kinds of transphobic things and you've said all kinds of transphobic things. And you're like, okay, do you have any examples of something transphobic that we've said so I can address that concern? And they were like, well, I can't think of any on the top of my head. And you're like, well, can you look them up? And they're like, well, no, I don't have my phone. And you're like, somebody get her a phone. And this is like totally like a, somebody get this guy a computer or something to look up an example of this hateful content that he's so worried about when he can't even come up with one example. And it just goes to show you people so easily get out over their skis with these, when you're loaded, when you have a foregone conclusion, you're coming into a conversation with, hey, Twitter's full of hateful content because Elon Musk bad, and I just pre-believe this narrative. And then when you're asked to substantiate it, you just get that like cognitive dissonance moment of like, I don't know.
Right.
And like you said, it's interesting that he didn't have another lie handy. I think he was just so jarred by the fact that, you know, he's realizing you know, the ground's crumbling out from underneath him.
Yeah, he fully expected that he was just going to get away with this and that Elon was just going to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, ever since I did take it over, I did open the gates for a bunch of right-wingers to get on the platform and start spewing hatred towards people. That is fully what journalists expect. This is not journalism. We'll get into that discussion a little bit later and talk about journalistic integrity, but this is certainly not it whatsoever. And I'm just looking at this moment here of this guy with his hand up and he's like trying so hard and Elon is just staring at him with the hand on the chin. Just ready. Just know this is a layup. This is a home run.
There are many organizations that say that that kind of information is on the rise. Now, whether it has on my feed or not. I mean, right, and if someone like the Strategic Dialogue Institute in the UK, they will say that. So
people will say all sorts of nonsense. I'm literally asking for a single example, and you can't name one.
Right, and as I already said, I don't use that feed. But
would you know that?
I don't think this is getting anywhere.
You literally said you experienced more hateful content, and then couldn't name a single example.
Right, and as I said,
that's absurd.
I haven't actually looked at that feed.
Then how would you know if it's hateful content?
Because I'm saying that's what I saw a few weeks ago. I can't give you an exact example. Let's move on. We only have a certain amount.
Let's move on.
Let's move on, please let this go. Please move on to the next thing. I don't know why it's reminding me of the whole TikTok trial thing that happened with the CEO, of all these people just like throwing questions at him and they don't even understand what it is that they're saying. Like you'd feel as though maybe in preparation for this interview with a very, you know, prestigious interviewee, like this is a pretty big deal to be sitting across from Elon Musk, regardless of who you are, regardless of your political affiliation, this would be a big deal to sit across from somebody who's done something this big in recent history. You would think you would go on Twitter and find examples of the things that you're talking about. But that's not what journalism is anymore. And you can just say, this is the narrative of the mainstream media. I'm going to be beholden to that narrative. And hopefully we get a good clip of me dogging on Elon Musk for what he's done and dunking on him. And that's just not what happened. It's better when they keep their journalism in writing, right? Because then they can twist the words and spin things and spin quotes or omit things that they don't want to admit to. But when you have it on video and you're face to face with somebody, it's a whole different world. Things start to switch up.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Yeah, and he quoted the interviewer, went back to the corner. He came up with the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. And now, like, actual journalists and people who care about the truth, like Michael Schellenberger on Twitter, are digging into that. And they found that this place is, like, the people who are pulling the levers at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue and institutions like it are funded by people like Burisma and have all sorts of broken incentive structures underneath them and are basically just the same type of activist, you know, ivory tower elites that just, you know, are the ones who are collaborating and putting out the narrative. So even when backed into a corner, the institutions that he's citing, the one example he was able to come up with was an activist one.
Yep. And they're coming after just regular, everyday, even classic liberals who are going against the woke ideology this institute is coming after and trying to get them canceled and censored. So clearly they are morally bankrupt as far as the information that they're putting out. And that's the one example that this guy could come up with without even actually giving any specifics in talking to Elon. And it just shows you either A, they are just overwhelmed with self-confidence and do not care about what the truth is. Or B, they know that they're lying, they know what the truth is, and they're trying so desperately to hold on to the lie that they've told a billion times. They're truly thinking that if you tell the lie enough, it will become truth. And that, in principle, is correct for the most part, unless you have somebody else who's going to stand up and tell you that you're lying in front of everybody. And when that person happens to be Elon Musk, you're in for a bad day. Is this guy going to keep his job after this? He shouldn't. He shouldn't. If I was an employer watching this, I would be like, you went into this situation wholly unprepared for who you were sitting across from and what result you were trying to get here. But that's journalism, right? You know, journalists used to be, and there still are, of course, really great journalists. They just don't happen to be working for these larger institutions and corporations anymore because guess what? They're not towing the line of ideology. But journalism used to be, okay, well, here's the mainstream narrative. How can I dig deeper? How can I find something that's maybe dissident to this? Who is not being heard in this situation and in this story? Is there a larger truth here that hasn't been touched yet? Or is this all a fabrication and the truth is hiding underneath? Let's go and find that. And it was just like, you know, searching and searching to put out something that was worthwhile and actually get to the truth, actually question the institution, actually view stories and news with a healthy amount of skepticism and try to your greatest effort to get the truth out to the American people and be the journalist that does that the best. Now it's just the opposite. Now it's a bunch of journalists looking up and going, oh, yes, daddy government, what would you like me to say today? Oh, yes, daddy corporation, what would you like me to say today? Oh, would you like that 500 words or 1,000? And then they write it up and throw it out into the ether where it gets consumed and the lie gets told enough that it becomes truth.
Yeah, they become the enforcers for the government instead of the people who are questioning them. And this is why they hate Twitter so much and are trying to bring it down, because if they can, you know, paint Elon Musk and Twitter with this brush of this, since you took over, hateful content is proliferating on here and everyone's having a horrible time and you've just let it all go off the rails and no one's there to moderate the content in the correct way like we do, then if they can establish that narrative, then they can dismiss it and they can, you know, just not let the people who are on Twitter, because which is a major source of news, which is a major source of, it's the town square effectively for modern society where a lot of ideas and news is discussed. But if they can, you know, defeat Twitter, bring it down, undermine its credibility, because under Elon, it's not real. Then they're the authority again, and they're the ones that everyone has to listen to. But because this is why it was so great what Elon did, even though he lost $20 billion in acquiring Twitter, it was the greatest act of philanthropy in history, in my opinion. But, you know, in doing that, he broke the stranglehold that the government and the mainstream media and all these, the academia had on the narrative. And now you have independent journalists and people who are able to go out there and offer a different perspective and poke holes in the narrative. And they can't rely on these quote unquote fact checkers and their institutional credibility. Oh, we're BBC. We're so credible. No, the truth will out. And that's what a platform that adheres to free speech will allow and facilitate. And that is why they hate it so much and why it's in their crosshairs.
Yeah. I mean, what an amazing opportunity that this journalist had to actually understand why Elon Musk would take such a step in his career and do something that is really not at least on a surface level and superficially, in his best interest. What a brilliant opportunity you had to dive deeper into that story and ask him questions about that. But instead, they already have this caricature of Elon in their mind that he is just this villainous billionaire, so they can come to the table and try to own him. And it just never works. There's a brilliant moment in this interview where he talks about how Twitter once had 8,000 employees and Elon shaved it down to 1,500. And he asks Elon, well, how did you feel that you did that? Just waiting for this, I don't know, villainous answer of, oh, it felt so good to, you know, put 6,500 people out of a job. And Elon goes, it was hard. It was difficult. Do you think I want to have this many people not have a job anymore? But when you acquire a company and there's fat, you have to trim the fat. Or 8,000 people lose their jobs. So am I supposed to lose the whole ship, or do I get a few crew members off? What do you want me to do?
He was projected to lose $3 billion a year, and now it's finally back to break-even point. So he took it from losing money to the tune of $3 billion annually to break-even. So, you know, and it's not his fault for, you know, the people before him let the company get so bloated that it was losing that much money and not producing that revenue that could sustain it. So he's doing what has to be done to, you know, triage and get the company back on its feet. So it's just so ironic that they're trying to club him over the head with that when it's really not even his fault that it was in that state to begin with.
Right. And let's not forget all the advertisers and companies that said in the wake of Elon buying Twitter, we're taking our advertisements, we're pulling them off and trying to use this corporatized power to essentially control the American mind. That's exactly what they're trying to do. Now, the founder of Quillette, Claire Lehman, I hope I'm saying her last name right, spoke about what she found were incentives in journalism. Quillette is a publication, for those of you who don't know, with several really great writers. Here's what she had to say.
But some point along the way, I realized that I wasn't actually arguing against a set of ideas at all. I was arguing against the business model. I realized that the publishers of this low quality content were not producing journalism as it is traditionally defined. They were in the advertising delivery business. When a publication relies on advertising revenue, it doesn't matter if a piece goes viral because people hate it. It doesn't matter if a piece goes viral because everyone is outraged by it. The revenue accrues regardless. In this business model, quality, which is more expensive to produce, becomes a liability. But some point.
There it is, plain and simple. Said it better than I ever could have said it. When you look at all these salacious headlines that you see on any given platform, and then you go, what? So-and-so did this, and you click, and then you read the article, and you find that that's not the case at all, and you just got a bullshit headline that was fed to you, or you're reading stories and you go, well, that doesn't sound true, and it ends up not being true, or you hear stories where they're quoting people, a source familiar with the matter, instead of like actual sources that they're getting this information from. It's just because their only incentive is to spit out as much product as they can. I was going to say information, but it's not even that. They want to spit out as many products as they can, I don't know, so they can staple different advertisements to it. And the more salacious it is, the more you click, which means the more they lie, the more you click. And it's just not what journalism used to be. And you have to think there's a lot of young people who are maybe going to college for journalism and thinking they're truly going to do something different. They're truly going to shake up reporting and they're truly going to shake up mainstream media now. And many of those people are choosing to do it independently. And I imagine all the others are getting sucked up into this system where they're just, I don't know. It's like news stations are like BuzzFeed now, just spitting out random quizzes and articles that mean nothing and have baseless information all throughout them, or it's just purely opinion. Like, it blows my mind sometimes. Like, sometimes I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, let me listen to the news, let me hear what's going on, and it's just somebody's opinion on what's going on. It's not actually telling me what's going on. And this is across the board. Right-wing media, left-wing media, whatever. When I turn on the news channel, I'm expecting objectivity of some sort. But now it's like they're hiring personalities because personalities gain more eyes and more advertisement than just waking up and telling you what's going on around you and in your community. It's just wild. And I don't know how we get out of the media hellscape we're in right now.
Yeah, no, I think a huge part of it is finding, you know, people like you, people like Joe Rogan, independent creators that you can just trust, because even if they don't have all the answers, or even if they're not completely unbiased, at least they're honest about their opinions and can separate the facts from their opinions and can shoot straight with you and win your trust. And I think, you know, we talk about the attention economy and how online all these companies, social media companies and news corporations and social media platforms are competing for people's attention, their eyeballs. But I think we're entering into a time of where it's the trust economy, and we're looking for people are looking for people to trust. They're looking for sources that, hey, if they say something, I know you're a straight shooter. You may have a certain slant, but at least you'll lay your cards on the table and I know where you're coming from. But I trust you. I trust you to at least, you know, be straightforward with me. And I know you. And I think that that's why more and more people are, you know, abandoning cable news and even New York Times and places like that, because you just literally cannot trust these sources anymore. And they've done that to themselves by undermining their own credibility and being activists and framing things and spinning things. So I'd rather just have somebody who will say, hey, you know, here's kind of my biases. I might have blinders over here, but this is my analysis on what's going on today. Take it or leave it, and let's discuss it and have a conversation.
Right.
And I think that's so much more appealing to people these days than just the same old, you know, people yelling at each other in 30-second sound bites on cable news, or articles with spin, and they're citing these activist, you know, think tanks to justify their positions. And when you dig into it for 5 minutes, you realize that it's all just a house of cards. And, you know, I think trust is becoming more important than ever.
Yeah, and it's crazy because the Joe Rogans of the world also have to get their information from somewhere. And like, mm-hmm. we wake up and Taylor and I have like a message chain where we send each other stories and stuff. So I'll read headlines and go like, holy shit, that's crazy. Click, and then read it. And I'm like, it's not at all what's happening. This is a lie. It is a straight up lie that is being plastered all over the internet.
I'm feeding you disinformation on Twitter sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Taylor constantly sends me misinformation all the time. So it's just like, oh my gosh, who can you trust? And Elon and at Twitter, I'm sure Elon was not the person who had his sole hand on this happening, labeled NPR and BBC News on Twitter as state affiliated media, meaning that they get government funding in order to create the things that they create. And NPR was apparently pissed about their affiliation with the government being shared publicly, so much so that they are going to take 50 plus accounts that they have on Twitter off of the platform. Little fishy, little weird. It's, you know, I don't know why that you would be so triggered by that. It's so interesting, but they're saying it brings into question our credibility. I think quite the opposite. It's actually quite transparent. The fact that, yeah, you are funded by an institution that might have a stake in what you say and might care about how you report on certain things. And that might affect the funding that you get as a news organization. And I think for the most part, people know that NPR is funded by the government, but they clearly don't want that being publicly said. I guess there's enough people who they're pulling the wool over their eyes for them not to want that publicly on their Twitter platforms.
I'm so bummed about NPR. It used to be so interesting. You could turn it on and while you're driving in the car. And, you know, this was like pre-COVID, pre-BLM, all that. They would be having some guy who's like a beekeeper on, and he'd be explaining to you the origins of these, you know, the honey in your grocery store or something, and just the whole process they used to make it. And you're like, oh wow, this is fascinating. And then, yeah. You know, at the top of every hour, they got the 5-minute news summary, and you're like, oh, this is a really succinct, you know, just a summary of what's going on in the world, updated on the hour, and how useful. And now it's like gender, race, climate, over and over again, anytime you turn it on, and it's just the same old narrative. And, you know, they rely so heavily on Twitter, or just in general on this credentialism, because underneath it, they have a bunch of BS, and they're masquerading as serious journalists now. But they're just using NPR as a stamp to say, you know, we're the serious credentialists. But in reality, they're just pushing propaganda. They're pushing ideologically bent stories and narratives and spinning everything to just promote their, you know, woke stuff in all those dimensions. And it's really a sad loss. But again, other creators are picking up the slack. And now you can can go on Joe Rogan and he's talking to some guy who digs up dinosaur bones in Montana, and you can listen to that for 3 hours instead of having to turn into NPR. Right. So, you know, the free market will win out as long as there's free speech. And I think that's happening. But, you know, we can play a sad song on the violin and RIP NPR for what it once used to be, but they're not going to be missed on Twitter.
I know. I remember being a kid sitting in my car, like sitting in the back of the car with my mom driving, and it would be like, "Welcome to NPR. Today we are traveling to Indonesia to go up a mountain to meet a special species of monkey." And I'd be like listening to this and be like, "This is really interesting. This is actually something I want to listen to." And they had like, "Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me." And I think Car Talk too was on NPR.
Car Talk, yeah.
Oh, and those are just like little blips in my childhood that I remember so fondly. And now it's like, NPR is going to detail the 65 different genders that you can be. And here's why race essentialism is the future of America. It's
yeah, or they'll have the beekeeper on and then they'll be like, "Now, how is the distribution of honey disproportionately affecting communities of color?" Right. Just go right into that. Or, "Gosh, what's the effect of climate change on your harvest season this year?" It's like, come on.
It's just horrible, man. It's horrible. But we're going to move on. We've got some other celebrity news. It's not just Elon Musk today, but Harry Potter star Daniel Radcliffe promotes child sex changes and says we should, quote, "trust kids to tell us who they are." And of course, we got this all on video. We got a clip for you to watch today of Daniel Radcliffe sitting down with, I believe, six transgender-identifying individuals to discuss this, who are all, I believe, came out as trans as minors.
Learn from, you know, out of the cradle that I am, you know, that I was a boy. I should like blue. I should like sports. I should be manly. I should like superheroes, yeah? And I never associated myself with those things. And we are told that we're not old enough to know this yet. Like, I mean, I'm only 11 years old. How do I know I'm a girl? 11. And I need more time to think about this.
But pause. 11 years old. 11 years old. And here's the thing. Of course you know if you like sports or superheroes or comic books or whatever the examples that this young she, her, I don't know, him gave. That does not mean that you are not a boy. And this is just wild to me. And something that's really good about this is it is actually good to hear from the children's mouth on this about why they've made the decision that they've made, because it actually shows how juvenile the thinking is surrounding gender and sex here. Her thinking was, don't like sports, don't like superheroes, don't like the color blue, must be a girl. And of course, when you're 11 years old and somebody teaches you that and says, if you're a boy, you like this, this, and that, and you go, well, I don't like those things, I must not be a boy. Of course, that's what you're going to think. And I bet you Daniel Radcliffe's not going to make that apparent to this person.
There are also people who do have like a slightly condescending but well-meaning attitude of like, well, people are young and like, how do we, you know, that is a huge decision. I'd love to hear from all of you about like...
It's condescending to tell an 11-year-old that maybe they're not quite ready to change sexes. That is condescension, apparently. Wow.
Why we can trust kids to like tell us who they are.
Well, I just feel like, well, me and you kind of share like a similar story. I transitioned like super young. I came out to my mom and, well, not telling her I was trans, but told her that I was a girl at the age of 6. It's been like years. Like, what, I've lived female more than I've ever lived male. So like, I just feel like it's just living proof that I obviously knew who I was, just like everyone else does.
Oh my gosh. The thinking is, it's so juvenile, guys. I can't. I've lived in the lie longer than I've lived in reality, so the lie must be true. It's honestly what the journalist, this is, we're seeing a through line here. The journalist believed the lie that Twitter had all this hate speech on it. He's lived in the lie long enough, so it must be the truth, right? I've lived as a girl long enough because I, you know, came out at 6 years old, and so it must be the truth. That means because I was assured and I was affirmed, and now I've been transitioning, so it must be true that I am actually a girl. No. And to think, oh, well, our journeys are the same. Meaning what? You didn't like sports, you didn't like the color blue, and you didn't like superheroes? Oh, Oh my gosh.
And to your point, this is, you know, very juvenile logic at play, which only underscores the notion that this person is not qualified as a minor, as a child, to make a permanent decision about their life. You know, we don't let people who are under 21 buy alcohol or buy cigarettes or whatever, and yet we're allowing people to permanently alter the course of their lives and potentially sterilize themselves or remove parts of their body permanently on the basis of, you know, feeling this is who I am. Which, you know, I wanted to get this right. I pulled this back up after watching this video, but this is from Irreversible Damage, Abigail Schreier's book, and she's citing a study done by Dr. Ken Zucker. And it says, in cases in which a child has not been socially transitioned by parents, she found that 88% outgrew their gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. So here's Daniel Radcliffe, you know, sitting with a bunch of children saying, tell us about how adults should listen to you guys about who you are. And of course, like you said, in this juvenile thinking, they're like, yeah, well, this is how I think about myself. And these are my feelings right now, which, okay, you know, maybe that's your feelings are valid about where you are in this moment in your life. And that's fine. But also, reality is a thing. And also, you know, we don't need to sit here and take cues from children on decisions that they can make for themselves that are going to affect their lives in really negative ways, and that they're going to grow out of, but according to research, at a rate of 88% if they're not affirmed in this direction with social transition. And, you know, they say, you know, never meet your heroes in person or whatever, because they'll disappoint you, but never watch your heroes host a Trevor Project panel of children who are gender confused, because that'll be even more disappointing.
Dude, and yeah, what a crazy endorsement to make on his point. Like, of all the hills that you would choose as Daniel Radcliffe being in this position, what a crazy hill, what a crazy uneducated hill you would sit on to endorse children mutilating their bodies. Like, really think about what he has chosen to take on. And he's not necessarily taking it on, which we'll get into this. We'll get into the history here, right? Daniel Radcliffe didn't have a peep to say about transgenderism until J.K. Rowling hit Twitter and said, you know, I don't agree with what's going on here. We need to protect women. Now, instead of saying, you know, I agree with J.K. Rowling, which he did, he came out and publicly said that and said, you know, I don't agree, even though she's given me so much of my career, I don't stand with her beliefs on transgenderism. He had to take it further. He had to go to the most radical place he could go, which is transitioning children, and then sit here and endorse it publicly. Just wild. And I doubt he has any information about the percentage of kids who change their minds on this. I doubt he has any information about the long-term effects of endorsing this ideology. I doubt he has any information about the fact that of these children sitting here, one of them, if not more of them, based on statistics, is likely to attempt to take their lives. A vast percentage of people who struggle with transgenderism and gender dysphoria attempt to take their lives, and many of them are successful. Is he going to acknowledge that? Is he going to talk about that? Is he going to bring that to light? Because he's got, what, 6 kids here? 2 of them, if not 3, if we're judging on today's statistics, are likely to attempt suicide based on the ideology that he is endorsing right now by sitting here with them and talking about this. Not going to say a peep about that, I bet.
I don't understand why I can't just decide that I'm a girl. It's a big decision to decide I'm a girl. It's a big decision to decide I'm a boy.
Except you didn't decide to be a boy. You were a boy. You were born a boy. There was no decision to be made. You could decide to be a feminine boy or a masculine boy or somewhere in between along the spectrum of ways to express yourself. But you did not decide to be a boy.
Right.
It's the same thing. There's no age. You don't have to be 18 to decide that, oh, I am who I am.
I think we don't give children enough credit for coming into this world and having a sense of purity and understanding for themselves. Like, I definitely had that at a very young age, and I tried to express that a lot, but I grew up in, like, a very stereotypically Christian family.
Okay.
So, like, me telling my mom any type of me being different was like, oh my God, like literally she called my grandma and they prayed over me. I was like 7.
That's like intense. 7.
And like at that very moment, like it was very like fearful, like fear striking. But like at the same time, if we're going to be able to like have relationships and be authentic with each other, this is something that I need you all to get, you know?
Yeah, but I would love to hear from you also about just like, as I said, like I always knew I was a boy because it was just a thing that I grew up knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow. You know what? I mean, more than just like being upset this is happening, I'm just thinking, like trying to think about 20 years down the line or 30 years down the line when this comes to, you know, to its full extent, and we actually have all the research and we're confirmed with all the young children who are living through this right now, how bad the outcomes are with this stuff. How is he going to feel that he chose to uneducatedly sit down and talk to these children about this and make an endorsement for the Trevor Project, which, for those of you who don't know, is an LGBTQ organization that outwardly endorses the mutilation of children and has worked with the likes of Dylan Mulvaney, that whole Dylan Mulvaney sing-songy dance thing that you guys watched that he did, I believe, in New York. That was the Trevor Project also. So they're really hitting home runs with getting their big stars to address and to endorse the mutilation of children. How's he gonna feel? I wonder if he's ever gonna get checked back in on when it comes to this subject matter. If 20 years down the line, we're gonna revisit Daniel Radcliffe to see about how he feels with his endorsement. They won't. And Tom Sowell writes about this at great length and talks about it. Intellectuals are never held accountable for their ideas. Not that I would go as far as to call Daniel Radcliffe an intellectual, because I purely think he's uneducated on the subject matter and is just choosing to virtue signal because J.K. Rowling did something that he did not like. They're never held accountable for the lies that they tell, for the ideas, and the lives that are ruined with the ideas that they push forward. So he won't be held accountable for this.
Yeah, and it's not just who's going to check in with Daniel Radcliffe, but who's going to check in on these young children
yep.
who he's encouraging to go down this path that statistically will lead them to depression, suicidal ideation, regret, sterilization and mutilation of their bodies. Who's going to check in with them and then ask Daniel, you know, hey, how do you feel about having promoted this to these kids? Mm-hmm. And not only that, you know, Trevor Project knows what they're doing in getting somebody like Daniel Radcliffe in this position. He's a hero to millions upon millions of children and young people all over the world.
Yep.
And so they know if they can get him in this position of lending his credibility, lending his status as championing their cause, then, you know, that's a huge win for them. And kids are going to flock to it in droves. And that's what's also just really disappointing about Daniel Radcliffe is, you know, just you have so much influence in people's lives. And to sit there and promote this among children is just so irresponsible. And like you said, there's no accountability, never having to face the consequences. It's like back in the BLM days, we talked about the celebrities who are like cheering rioters on and saying, we'll bail you out of prison from their from their ivory tower, you know, walls with security and their houses that have, you know, are on lockdown and they're getting their food delivered and everything. But yeah, go ham on the town, because that's what's so insufferable about climate activists. You know, they're telling us that we shouldn't have children and all this stuff while they're flying around in private jets emitting more carbon than our car will in our entire lifetime. And it's just like, you know, it's a common theme among these people, but this feels particularly pernicious given Daniel Radcliffe's influence with this particular demographic and also just the consequences that are going to be faced by the people who follow what he's endorsing.
Yeah, it is very reminiscent of me, not reminiscent as though I lived through it, although we are living with the remnants of it right now, of the opioid crisis. And it sparked something in me that I had to look up, because there used to be these old ads that would run in the early 2000s, late 90s, of people cheering on opioids and saying, you know, your doctor's going to prescribe you opioids and you're going to feel so much better and life's going to be great and all your pain's going to go away. And they actually did a series where they checked in on patients who had been in these old opioid commercials and like OxyContin commercials and detailed the path of addiction and just ruining their lives that they went through purely because Big Pharma, these corporations, felt the need to endorse a drug that they should not have endorsed. And that's exactly what's happening with these kids. I'm going to see if I can find an example of this happening so you guys can watch. Of course, we got YouTube.
While you're pulling that up, I've seen a couple comments. I just had to say, they're saying you're a groomer, Harry.
Oh gosh, it is. It's true.
I mean,
it's true. Here's this video, by the way. In 1998, Purdue Pharma distributed a promotional video of to 15,000 doctors telling how OxyContin improved 7 patients' lives.
I got my life back now. Now I can enjoy every day that I live. I can really enjoy myself. And before, even a good day was hell. I mean, I couldn't enjoy nothing. But now I can enjoy myself. That's when I said wonderful. I look at the future the same way a young guy, 25, 30-year-old would.
Over time, his family said Johnny became addicted to OxyContin and other narcotic painkillers.
His biggest problem was he would sleep a lot. And I mean, he was at the point where he could be sitting in here talking like I'm talking and fall right off to sleep while he was talking. I went to the point where I had to put his socks and shoes on, his clothes on, his shaving, wash his hair, look out at him just like you would look out at a 2 or 3 year old.
You get the gist, right? Okay, so in 1998, OxyContin was great. It solves all your problems, solves all your pain. You're dealing with something, you're struggling through it, you're uncomfortable. Here, there's a pill for that. Here, there's puberty blockers for that. Here, there's hormone replacement therapy for that. Here, there's sex reassignment surgery for that. And then let's check back in with you in 14 years, like they did in this, and see if you are still here. There's a reason that his wife is talking for him in this video, and it's because he's no longer here due to Big Pharma endorsement of this drug and pushing it on him and saying that this is what's going to solve all your problems. And if you check back in with the young children who are being indoctrinated with gender ideology 14 years down the line, 20, 30 years down the line, guess what? A lot of them are not going to be here. Simple as that. They are not going to be here. And you'll be able to make a video where you take these old clips of Daniel Radcliffe talking to these kids with the Trevor Project and compare it to where they ended up, and it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. But no, he's so flippant about it in his virtue signaling that he's just going to take a major step. And Taylor, it's really important that you point out how involved he is in so many kids' lives just by virtue of being the person that he is. But he's, no, the virtue signaling matters more. That's what people need to know.
Crazy. Yeah, and speaking of the through line that you mentioned earlier with the media and the broken incentive structure that we have, like these are the truths and the types of stories that we need to be, that should be getting, seeing the light of day and should be, you know, in the public eye, and that there should be an appetite for, because tremendous harm is being done. And like this OxyContin story so many other things that have happened in history, but they just get buried in the time. And then by the time the truth gets out, people just have the outrage fatigue. I feel that way about a lot of COVID stuff, the way we withdrew from Afghanistan. It's like, you know, we do live in just this constant outrage machine that is the media, but a lot of the outrage is just a distraction and a temporary one. Just designed to get your attention for a moment. But oftentimes we become blind to a lot of the more egregious things that are happening that we should actually be outraged about. You can think about like the human labor camps in China and the human rights violations that are happening to the Uyghurs and all that. It's like North Korea still, that's just an ever-present, you know, torture of an entire population of people that just gets buried. And, you know, as much as we are an outrage machine in the media, there's a lot of things that we just, that don't get the attention that they deserve, because it's not the popular thing. It's not the thing that you get virtue points for promoting at the time. And it's just really unfortunate that we can't seem to give the appropriate amount of attention to where the most amount of harm is being done. Yeah. And we're always sweeping a lot of harm under the rug in the name of whatever the activist cause du jour is, or in the name of virtue points.
Instead, the FBI is concerned about inceldom. They're worried about the incels, right? And finding terrorist extremist language on the internet. And we'll touch on this story very briefly. So the Heritage Foundation's oversight project said it used a Freedom of Information Act request to expose FBI documents that include glossaries showing that common internet slang has been flagged as an indication of involuntary celibate violent extremism or, quote, racially or ethnically motivated violent extremism. So you're wondering, okay, what are these words going to be? What is this vocabulary that they've put in this glossary that is going to label somebody as an incel or somebody who is driven towards racially or ethnically motivated violent extremism? Well, your words are red-pilled. Red-pilled is one of the words that apparently is a flag there. The word Chad is a flag. So if you're using that word, looks maxing, meaning trying to self-improve and become more attractive, that's apparently a red flag term here. Based, if you use the term based, the FBI has that in their glossary as in relation to inceldom and race or ethnically based violence. Gosh, who's being paid to do this? There's an FBI agent whose job is to do this, is to put together glossaries of violent extremism and define the term red pill and base to the best of their knowledge, which is just insane to me. This is what we're doing. And again, very reminiscent of like the TikTok trial thing where they're putting together these words and trying to get, you know, good definitions for them. And they're used by virtually everybody. I've said red pill based, I don't know how many times on this show. I am not an incel, nor am I racially or ethnically motivated towards violent extremism. So we're on a watch list somewhere, ladies and gentlemen.
The FBI must be recruiting out of places like the BBC and NPR because the type of enforcement and the way that they're defining things just betrays a level of incompetence and motivated reasoning that is, I don't know, fairly on the nose.
Gosh, it's just even LARPing. Live action role playing. LARPing is on this list, the glossary of inceldom. Oh, it's just clown world is what we're living in right now.
People that play Quidditch at the park down the street are doubly in the crosshairs because not only are they LARPing, but they're LARPing transphobe J.K. Rowling's sport.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid.
There's multitude. There's a combination of things happening there. And they're doing this because at least 5 lethal attacks in the U.S. have been carried out by incels. 5. 5 lethal attacks. So a whopping number. They really got us quaking over here. Just crazy. We're going to do one more story and then we're going to get into super chats. I didn't know whether or not to get into this or not, but I just found it very interesting. Cardi B apparently went online talking about predators and said, quote, "This world is full of predators. They prey on the innocent, the ones who are most unknowing, our children. Predators could be our neighbors, our school teachers, even people with money, power, and our churches. Constantly talk with your kids about boundaries and what they should allow people to do with them." I 100% agree with the statement that she's put out. I think that's very much on the nose. People felt the need to label Cardi B a predator because she has a history which she has admitted to of apparently drugging and robbing men who were patrons of the establishment that she was stripping at. So as you can see, there might be some people who are going to call that out. And this was her response. Language warning for any of the youngsters watching right now. Maybe come back later.
Tweet up, right? I put the tweet up and now people want to come at me like, "Oh, bitch, you're the wrong messenger. You're the wrong messenger. Then you robbing drug men." And it's like, listen. Y'all not going to keep doing this because when it comes to fucking weird ass predators and rapists and pedophiles and shit, I'm really like, I don't play that shit. I really don't fucking play that shit. And for y'all to like trying to say that I'm like some predator or I'm some weird bitch because niggas wanted to buy pussy from me, and a lot of y'all be like, "Oh, these were vulnerable men you took advantage of." These were not no fucking vulnerable men. These are some freak ass niggas that like to go to the strip club.
I can't. We're not even going to watch this whole thing here. But anyway, she talks about how robbing and raping are two different things. And she did the robbing part, but not the raping part. So everybody should listen when she talks about the predators thing. And the interesting crux of this conversation here is not...
I just appreciate the translation. Thank you.
Right.
Kind of, yeah, I hadn't pieced that together yet. So
she's like, yeah, if you want me to translate, right? Okay, if it's going to come through me to translate, she's saying, I robbed a bunch of bad men who were patrons of my strip club and they deserved it. And, you know, they were trying to, you know, run game on me. I robbed them. That's totally different than somebody being a predator towards a child. And it's interesting because in Cardi B's way of saying it, it's true. It's true. And what I thought the interesting conversation here is that what you do in life is really important. And the reputation that you build for yourself is really important, because then when you do try to speak about actual real life issues, that reputation is going to come up again, even if it has nothing to do with what you're talking about. So Cardi B could come out and very seriously have a plea to the American public about predators and protecting children and about respecting boundaries and all these things. But nobody's going to listen because of the stuff you did in the past. And it's so, you can so quickly lose credibility when you, I don't know, commit a crime or just are generally viewed as a bad person with a bad reputation. So that's always important to keep in mind. But as far as that tweet's involved about calling out a world of predators, Cardi B's completely right. She's completely right. And she's joining the ranks of some other celebrities who are choosing to talk about it. Blake Lively has been open about human trafficking and child predators. Holly Holm of the UFC has been open and talking about it. And it seems like it's starting to get more press recently, like more people are actually choosing to talk about this subject. So it's very, very interesting. Yeah.
Would you say she's based, maybe a little red pilled?
Yeah, it's feeling like it.
The FBI going to be coming after us for saying that now?
Yeah, our very own personal agent is watching right now. We're on a list somewhere, if not for the red pilling and the based rhetoric, for other things, I'm sure.
But she is right that, you know, after you translated that, it does ring true that, you know, stealing from bad people, like, you know, Robin Hood, is not the same as being right. a predator like Jared from Subway. It's much different on the moral scale of badness. So,
it is.
You know, Cardi, some wisdom there through all of the potty language.
Yeah. Just don't rob people and don't be a predator. It's pretty much where we're landing on the show today. Let's get into Super Chats. Taylor, I'm sure...
I'm going to need one second. I got to make a couple of clicks here.
That's robbing and raping is two different types of shit. So don't effing call me no rapist or predator. Don't play with my name like that. I love it.
It's very, I mean, it is entertaining to hear. All right. We got Jason Lee says, hey, folks, greetings from Australia. Love your work.
Wow. So
thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Alex Centeus says, hey guys, I'm thinking the multiverse is real. You won't believe who I found on my flight back from Vegas. It's your doppelganger, Amala. Check DM.
Check my DM. Okay, check my DM where?
Probably just, Instagram, I imagine.
I'll check on Instagram. You don't have to leave another super chat to tell me where. I'm just right. Put it in the chat.
No, Amala, you should make him.
One. You have to pay to play.
Rice and Spice, journalist, quote, or says, journalist, colon, I will be canceled if I even quote it. Laughing emoji.
Oh, if you say like journalist? Yeah.
I think that was the Elon story, and he's saying the journalist in that position will be canceled if he quotes one of the hate tweets that was found.
Gotcha.
It's that giving him a lie. Excuse. Remember you said he didn't have a lie ready? He should have had one.
That would have been a better excuse than what he gave. That would have been much better.
It could have been watching Unapologetic Live and had a lie handy from Rice and Spice.
Yeah.
Ram Tiger Falcon says, I flippin' made it. So happy brother Taylor is back. I waited to show my love until he returned. Keep doing great things. Now don't ever shut up, but take my money. Here's a fourth of a gas tank.
That's
and that was a $10 super chat. So I guess that is a fourth of a gas tank in California, at least.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't
my
know.
My Prius
if that's
was
a fourth.
10 gallons. So
yeah.
Not even.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Yeah. And Taylor is back. I forgot to even acknowledge that at the top of the show. I'm just so used to Taylor being here.
Yeah, I was in the great state of Minnesota the last couple of days. Grandfather passed away last week and went to the funeral. So appreciate y'all sending some love. Mm-hmm. It was a great service, just honoring him. And got to have my whole family come together, which is really rare. All my immediate family siblings that are strewn about the country and spend some good time together. So never fun, but, you know, it was a healthy time, and I'm glad to be back. So yeah. I appreciate you guys. Nicholas Tyler says, boondoggle boon, like raccoon doggle, like goggle.
Oh, wow. I have a feeling this is going to be a staple of the show, this boondoggle word, because I can't, I need to look it up. I don't even know what it is.
This is new to me. I haven't heard it on the show yet.
That was Monday. Yeah, that was a Monday thing. Sorry.
I felt like I was like borderline, boondoggle. You know, rapping or spoken wording, but just the way that that was written, it made me feel, you know, throw a Cardi B beat. Yeah.
Okay. So it's work or activity that is wasteful or pointless, but given the appearance of having value. Okay. Got it.
Well, thank you, Nicholas. We're looking forward to the next boondoggle super chat. Dicks and butts. I was wondering where you were.
He's always here, buddy.
When you say it like that.
Yeah.
But I don't like superheroes. OMG, am I a girl?
These are the questions we all must ask ourselves in the modern day.
Yeah, I don't know. If you don't like superheroes, it's girls you don't like, because Marvel's gender swapping every superhero we've ever had. Yeah. So maybe you're a boy.
It's like the Brie Larson, Angela Bassett's and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. I stopped watching Marvel before the race swapping and gender swapping just because I had superhero fatigue. And now I'm like, oh, definitely not going back down that rabbit hole.
I never watched it, so.
Wow.
Not watching it even harder.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we need to have Amala watches Avengers reaction video.
Please.
You guys want to see that?
No, you don't.
Tax Fraud says, sex change is a drastic change. I need to be 21 to drink alcohol. I need to be 21 to smoke or own a handgun. But they can decide at just the right age of 10 or less. The sense ain't sensing.
No, the math ain't math and the sense ain't sensing. None of it makes sense. And these people need to be brought to task in terms of defending that belief. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable that we're having these conversations about what kids can consent to that extent. Blows my mind. Blows my mind.
Wild. And sorry, I got your name wrong because it's tax season, but it's tax fraud, not tax fraud.
It's very open about that that crime there.
Lachlan Rother says, Amala, you've mentioned before that your partner is from Australia. Whereabouts in Australia is he from?
Sydney.
Lots of love from Melbourne.
Sydney. He's from Sydney. I won't give any more specifics about where in Sydney, but Sydney.
Tell us more. Leah Menezes says, speaking from experience as a trans person and being around other trans people, it's definitely a social contagion for a lot of people. Many of them wouldn't have any dysphoria if they weren't online.
Yeah, that it's nice to hear that actually confirmed by somebody who's going through it, because it's like, yeah, if you say you're feeling something and then suddenly you're surrounded by other people who say they feel the same way that you do, how are you not supposed to go deeper into the hole that you're in? That just seems basic.
100%. Amp1 says, first super chat. Thank you for the super chat. Trans don't qualify for life insurance because rate of suicide and experimentation. How many medical professionals take the time to explain that to parents and children?
Whoa, is that true? I did not know that.
That is wild. I'm
going to have to research that.
Yeah.
Anyways, but, I mean, I'm going to research that.
I would
that.
Kind of, you know, I could see how there could be a there with, you know, if you're undergoing experimental treatments on your body and if you're, you know, entering into a group that is statistically more likely for suicide, then that would factor into the sort of risk that is posed by your insurance. But it's interesting. We'll have to dig into that. Sup, my dude says, stream title reminds me of the song Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, which makes me want to tear my eardrums out and soak them in sulfuric acid.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies.
That reminds me of, there's a famous, you've probably seen it. There's a YouTube edit of a one of the famous faith healer guys, Benny Hinn, who would like touch people and they'd fall over.
Oh, gosh.
In like these really extreme charismatic services. I've actually been to a service where he was there, funny enough. But and then he'd like wave his jacket and like people would, you know, just fall down in droves, and they play Let the Bodies Hit the Floor while he's doing that. And it's really funny.
Is not serious. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's real.
Go check it out. Oh my gosh. I will check that out.
Thanks for the reminder, dude. Text fraud again. The FBI needs to touch grass.
Hey.
I don't know that expression. I don't know what that means. Is that like kick rocks?
It's kind of like that, yeah. It's kind of like just go outside, go do something.
You kids keeping me up to speed with all the lingo.
I'm pretty sure touch grass is like old school, isn't it? It gives me 1950s vibes, but
it's like, I don't know. I think it's used to like tell people like who never go outside, like
right,
if
like go do something.
Homebody, yeah, like go out and touch grass.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they need to do more than just touch grass, but we'll leave that for next week. Maddie says, around 6 or 7 years old, I told my dad, I wish I was a boy so I could take my shirt off outside school. So scary to think that a little girl today would be told she's trans. Girl, no, it was just hot out.
Yep, that sounds about right. I'm sure I said many a thing like that when I was a kid. I was a super tomboy as a kid, so, oh my gosh. Frightful. Fright-inducing.
Indeed. So glad I grew up in the before times.
Mm-hmm.
Danny says, my friend, he's a guy identifying as a girl, said that he would listen to any opposition I had about him being trans. What's the best argument you would use to change his mind about trans ideology?
Oh, gosh, that is a hefty question. I don't know. Oh. I mean, the best? What is the best? I mean, I'm always in, I'm not going to give a prescription as for what's the best. There's like a bunch of different sources. In a lot of our videos on gender, we talk about other people who you should look to. It depends on what type of person this is too, like what speaks to them more. I think something really powerful is hearing from detransitioners about their story, because it's somebody who you directly relate to as far as your experience and what you're going through personally. So that's always really powerful. If he's or she is a more analytical person and thinks more systematically about things, neuroscientists like Deborah So, psychologists, like Ken Zucker, writers like Abigail Schreier. It just is wholly dependent on who they are as a person and what resonates with them. So I don't know who would be the best.
Yeah, that's tough. And this is also assuming that you're going into a conversation where it's like, we both fully commit to be completely rational and objective and right. Open-minded and to speak in good faith and to be willing to be persuaded if we can, are presented with sufficient evidence. And that is often in these types of one-on-one interactions and personal relationships is not how conversations typically go.
Right.
And so if you're trying to influence someone, it's generally helpful to, you know, lead with empathy and, you know, make sure that they feel completely understood in their positions, that you can state where they're coming from as well as they can, where you can say, is this how you see yourself? Is this how you see the world? And then make sure that they fully understand that you understand where they're coming from. And then you can maybe introduce a new idea. So have you ever thought about this? Or, well, I saw this, you know, statistic, and then you can kind of, you know, present that new information if your goal is to influence, because that works better than just, I'm going to present you the ironclad argument. And most people are not going to respond to that.
Ask lots of questions. Really try to understand why it is that they think they are a woman.
Totes. Okay. But that's a good question. Thank you. Rice and Spice says, I thought it was funny, but wokes cancel all A-L-L-Y-S a lot. I think this was the one who supplied the lie to the BBC reporter. So he thought it was, I mean, I thought it was funny. So I got your joke. So
Elon thought it was funny.
You're not canceled here. Alex says he sent the DM on Instagram, so we'll have to pull it up there to see your doppelganger. GQ says, what does it say in the intro? What does the girl say?
I think it says young Apollo with the, and then it gets cut off. So it's young Apollo. We just picked it because it was the first like hip-hoppy beat that I heard. So
I mean,
and it just happens to sound like Apollo, unapologetic. It just happens to sound like, it just happens to fit. So it does slap. It's a good song.
Right. So until Maddie Healy writes us a new intro song, that's going to be it. Because
you hear that, Maddie?
Just right for us. Text fraud again. Amala can be our superhero. Swole Amala.
Got so many comments on my arms on Monday's stream, I think, that it made me, I was like, do I need to stop? I literally told my boyfriend, I'm like, do I need to stop doing arm workouts now? Because I keep getting comments. Do I need to like revert back? That's so funny.
You're gonna come in turtlenecks and long sleeves now. Insecure about everyone's commentary on your muscles. Too swole.
too small.
Nathan Coldis says, how have you guys felt the show has changed since Will left? Is the vibe different? It feels more cohesive.
Yeah, we're chilling.
Interesting question.
We're chilling. That's all I'll say.
I mean, yeah. You were chilling.
Yeah.
The real Chloe says, Brett Cooper said that. Okay, I don't know what exactly we're referring to.
But... we don't have timestamps on these things.
Yeah, need a little more context, but you know, there's a lot of overlap there, so we're here for it. Text Fraud again says, will we ever see a Brett Cooper and Amal Epinobi video? Best of both worlds.
Working on it. We will eventually. I can't say actively working on it, but we will. We will at some point hopefully do it.
It's,
I'm sure
it's
Brett
an inevitability in the universe.
Yeah, just, right, right. It's going to happen. The more you guys ask for it, the more we're just going to wait for it, I guess. But yeah, I'm sure Brett would be down to collaborate at some point.
Yeah,
I haven't asked.
Like, we can't like get a super chat and then like go and do it immediately. It has to like occur naturally. And so the more we're asked about it, the more it's like, oh, well, we just got the message. So now we have to, you know.
Right.
Reset the timeline. Right. We need like a little counter, days since request of Brett Cooper collab, and then we'll reset it and see how long that can make it. Well, we just have to reset it now because the real Chloe said we need Brett and Amla to collaborate. So there we go.
Back at the top.
Let's see. That may be our last one. Yeah, I think that's our last one for the day. So,
oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. So that's our last message. So we've reset the Brett Cooper clock. and then, you know, we'll revisit that as time goes by. I really haven't asked Brett yet, but at some point we'll make it happen. I don't even know what the collab would be, so we'll have to figure that out for you guys.
I know.
No,
I think
idea.
That's the main thing, is we're waiting for like the right idea or right, you know, setting for what that video would look like, because we don't want to just do something lazy and boring.
Right, right. It's got to be a smash hit, guys. Speaking of smash, why don't you guys smash that like button if you're watching right now? We would greatly appreciate it. It helps more people find our YouTube channel. I don't know if that's actually true. I think it's true. I feel like the more you guys are engaged, the more people find the YouTube channel and find this message that we're talking about here. Guys, thank you so much for watching. We appreciate every single one of you. And we're going to be back tomorrow with a video about... another video about what girls are wearing at the gym. I saw this viral TikTok of this girl complaining about not being able to wear whatever it is that you want to the gym. And she goes into all of her arguments, even a biblical argument at some point. So we are going to talk about that on tomorrow's show. And of course, we'll be back Friday for our live. Can't wait. Don't miss it. Guys, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And sign up for our email list and newsletter. That's in the link in the description down below. Also, we have a Discord where you guys can talk to one another, have fun, hash out your debates, talk about your pets, whatever it is that you want to talk about on Discord. It is free range for you guys. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.